Kabbalah in elucidating
simplifying
the struggle.
Verse 26.
You know, it's like the old joke they say that there were Mekubalim who wanted to write a commentary on the Gemara that would incorporate all of the secrets of Kabbalah. So they initially had like a 500-volume commentary. So the chief Mekubal said, cut it down. Get the essence. So they cut it down to 250 volumes. It says it's more and more, and they cut it down. So they finally cut it down, and they wind up with Rashi, which means in Rashi is all of the inner meaning. So the truth of the matter is that you have a similar process here that, in a way, to paraphrase, turns into something that sounds very, very simple, something that we grew up with, you know, from first grade, you know, the Yetzer Hara. So, as I say, it's an impossible sefer to summarize in that way, because then it becomes much more simplistic than it really is. So maybe we'll try to read a little bit in it just to get a sense of some of the vocabulary that is used here. Remember that the first part of the Tanya is devoted to explicating the concept of the Beinoni, the middle of the rotor, and the Chiddush of the Bava Tanya. And this is the whole thesis of the whole 52 chapters of the first Chelek, is that a Beinoni does not mean, as the Rambam would have it, he who is equally balanced in mitzvos and averos. Rather, the Beinoni is actually a great tzaddik. A Beinoni is a person who never sins. But the difference between the tzaddik and the Beinoni is the tzaddik is the person who has vanquished evil from within him. So there literally is no evil. There is no struggle that he is presently going through. The Beinoni lives in the world of struggle. And the struggle, Kabbalistically, is represented as the struggle of the two souls within the human being. There is the animal soul that is the source of Ra, that is the source of, again, it's not even so much evil, but the source of laziness, hedonism, desire for pleasure and comfort. And that is called the animal soul that resides in the blood. And in fact, the animal soul is actually the source of some things that are good and positive in many ways. The animal soul, it is said, is the source of emotions, which can be good or bad, but they're kind of uncontrollable. And the animal soul, the Bava Tanya writes, is also the source of the natural instinctive goodness that a Jew feels. In other words, essentially, you can already see that the Bava Tanya considers emotions that are not rooted in intellectual contemplation as kind of nothing great. In other words, they're the animal soul. The same animal soul that causes you to murder and to steal might cause you to feel sorry for people at various times. But that comes from the animal soul. That is called a mida of teva, a mida of nature. It is not from work. It is not from thought. It is not from contemplation. And then we have what is called the godly soul. And according to the Bava Tanya, he localizes these things. He says the animal soul is located in the left chamber of the heart that has an accumulation of blood, because that soul is in the blood, as the Pasuk says, ki hadam hu hanefesh, right? Because the nefesh is in the blood. The origin of the godly soul is in the moach, in the mind. But what he says is, there's a lot of cross-fertilization here. And that is, the emotions and the passions of the heart will often penetrate the mind, meaning they will distort our thought patterns. And very often, well, think of it this way. I mean, people use their minds for all sorts of ways of figuring out how they can make more money or indulge in their hedonistic passions. So often, it is the chalal smali of the lev that influences the mind. And vice versa, he says, there is the koach of the mind to awaken the heart to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, there is movement in both directions. But the primary source of the godly soul is in the mind. And the primary source, or the exclusive source of the animal soul, is called in the lev. And he does, let me just find the parak here. He has a very beautiful way of describing it. Let me just find this here. Thank you. Yeah, I'll read you a little bit from Perek Tess, where he describes this struggle in a very picturesque term. He says, Hine, Mako Mishkan Nefesh Abahamis, the dwelling place of the animal soul, Shemiklipas Noga. So here again we have a little bit of some Kabbalistic terminology, although it's not essential to the overall argument. And that is, Kabbalah talks about the light of Hashem as if it is a fruit. That's often a term that is used. It's a fruit. It's something that's edible, nourishing, but it is contained within inedible peels. And therefore, evil in the world, that which is far from God, is called a klipa. Now, the Arizal writes that there are four levels of klipa, and which are different levels of evil. There's the deepest, worst klipa, etc. But the klipa that is closest to the fruit is called klipas noga. Now, klipas noga, noga is twilight. And just as twilight is a mixture of good and evil, so klipas noga is the aspect of klipa that is closest to good. And he makes the point that the nefesh habahamis of a Jew, gets its spiritual life. The nefesh habahamis always comes from the klipa. It gets its life force from the klipa, but the nefesh habahamis of a Jew gets its life force from klipas noga. And therefore, there is still some connection to the light of Hashem. So he says, that is belayv, that is in the heart, b'chalal hasmali, in the left chamber, shehu molei dam, uchsif adam hu hanefesh, lachain, therefore, kol hatavos v'hisparos, all of the lusts, and all of the self-glorification, v'kas, v'deimehen, hein belayv. They start off in our emotions. Umehalev heim mispashtos b'chalakuf. Right, so it starts off here, and it spreads everywhere, and you become consumed with them. V'gam ola l'moach shebarosh. What happens when a person is taken by these emotions? His mind begins to obsess over them, to devise plans and strategies, and how will I avenge my honor? So the mind has been co-opted by these emotions. Lachshev l'harer b'hem, l'schakem b'hem, and to think about wise plots. Kamosha hadam mekora b'lev, just as the blood starts pumping from the heart, and from the lev it's mispashet l'chol ho'evorim, it spreads to all of the limbs. The gam ola l'moach shirosh, and it goes up to the brain. Now the same thing is the other way around. Ach mako mishka nefesh elokis, the dwelling place of the godly soul, is b'muchin shebarosh, is in the mind, the brain, u'misham mispashetes l'chol ho'evorim, and what the mind thinks spreads to every part of the body. The body carries out the directives of the brain. And v'gam b'lev b'chalol hayamini. Okay, he says the right part of the heart can receive that input from the brain. She'ein bodam. Again, biologically some of this is not so understandable, but he says that the imagery that he's using is the chalol hasmali has the dam, and it is the makam of the nefesh habahamis. The chalol hayamini does not have that, and he even quotes a pasuk to that effect. Lev chacham liyamino. There's a pasuk that says the heart of a wise person is to his right, and that is suggested to mean, therefore, that the part of the chacham's heart that is most dominant in his personality. Now again, even if you assume that scientifically this isn't true, I mean, this is metaphoric language, meaning if you describe the left part of the heart as the unbridled emotion and passion, and if you describe definitionally the right part of the heart as the emotions that are controlled by the moral and spiritual intellect, so the pasuk is making the point, the chacham, the wise person, and in Mishlei, by the way, wise does not mean smart. In Mishlei, the word chacham is always used for a person who morally has self-control and walks in the ways of Hashem. So a wise person is one whose mind controls his emotions rather than his emotions controlling his mind. So the fact that metaphorically we talk about the right part of the heart as the part that's influenced by the moach, okay, so that's a metaphor. But ultimately, as we don't have to kind of dissect the heart and determine, you know, which part of it has more blood, that's not so important. What is important here is the right part of the heart represents the sublimation of emotions to the control of the mind, as opposed to the left that represents the uncontrollable emotions that control the mind. By the way, there is a famous vortz, although it's not in the commentary on Mishlei, from the Vilna Gaon, on Lev Chacham Liyamino. Actually, it's a very beautiful vort. He says, when you look at a Hebrew sefer, so the pages to your right are what you've already learned. And the pages to your left are what you haven't learned. So the Vilna Gaon says, a wise person looks at what they've accomplished and they take pride in it and it encourages them to go on. A fool is always looking at how much more there's left and gets discouraged. So he says, a chacham looks to the right and a kaseel looks to the left. That's how they say that, b'shem the Vilna Gaon. Of course, I have to say, if you were the Vilna Gaon and you look to the right, indeed, you can have a lot of... that can give you chizuk. I mean, sometimes we have to worry. If we look to our right, you know, maybe there's not that much there. We can get discouraged that way as well. But I think the answer is even that shouldn't be the case, because whatever a person should feel, Baruch Hashem, I've learned a pasuk, I've learned a mishnah. You know, if every word of Torah is so valuable, then no matter how much or little someone learns, someone should feel gratitude for that, and that should give them chizuk to want to do more. Okay. Now, he says, what is this lev in the right? This is avas Hashem, kerishve shalheves, that the mind can influence the heart to have a love of God that ascends like the sparks of a torch going upward. Very passionate love, misla heves, that will burn brightly, belev maskilin. Again, maskilin, not to be confused with the movement known as the Haskalah, which was an anti-Torah movement, and Balatanya himself had his disagreements with early maskilin. But maskilin means those who think, those who are enlightened with their thought. Again, what he's saying is the following. The love of God that we're talking about, which is the passionate, deep love, once again, this is Sishita, is the love that comes from contemplation, from Torah study, from thought. It is not that spontaneous emotion that you just have. But from the Moach to the Chalol Hayamini awakens an Avas Hashem, which is Kerishve Shalheves Mislaheves Belev Maskilim Hamevinim, who understands, Umisbonanim, and they think, bedatam, asher b'mocham, they use their head, their minds, bidvarim hama'oririm esa'ava. So you see, this is a very strict standard. This is a standard that we often do not follow. In fact, Chabad themselves don't follow this. We tend in what we do, you know, whether it's NCSY, Kirov, whatever it is, to try to kind of arouse emotions by in various artificial ways. I don't mean that pejoratively, but you know, people get into the mood, they're into the spirit, etc. The Baal HaTanya suggests that it's exactly the opposite process. One starts with thinking, one starts with contemplating the greatness of Hashem. And as one thinks about it more and more and more deeply, there will awaken in one's heart a great burning love and yearning to be connected to Hashem. So it's not the arousal of the emotions. It is the mind, as it were, that starts off first. In fact, we will see, he says some things about Talmud Torah that one would not associate with Chassidus, in which he talks about the not just the learning of Torah, he says the knowledge of Torah literally connects you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because God is and His Torah are one, and the only way you can know God is by knowing the Torah, and therefore you are literally enveloped in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you know Torah, it's not just what learned, it's not just the mechanical process of learning, but the knowledge that one has. So he says that through the Moach you get passionate love, v'chein simchas levav, and you get a joyous heart, b'tiferes Hashem, when you realize the glory of God, v'hadar ga'ono, and his majesty. Kasher einei achacham asher barosha b'moach chachmasu binaso, through the eyes of a wise person with his mind and his wisdom and his understanding, mistaklim, when he gazes, b'yakara d'malka, in the glory of the king, v'tiferes g'dulaso, and the beauty of his greatness, ad ein cheker, that has no limits, v'ein sof, there's no end, v'tachlis, there's no finishing point, k'mavur b'makam acher, v'chein shar mido k'daisha shebelev, and all of the holy midos of the heart, heim mechabad shebemochet, chabad is an abbreviation, the chachma bina da shebemoch, meaning, yes, there are some good midos that come from the chalol hasmali, but because they are not the product of the Chabad Shebemochen, Chachma Bina Da Shebemochen, I mean, they're nice, they're good, but they are not the ultimate value in Avodas Hashem. So now he says the following. Hine Kesiv, it says by Yaakov and Esav, when Rivka was pregnant with twins, Uliom Milaom Yamatz, one nation shall always be us over the other nation. In other words, there'll be times that Esav will dominate us, most of our history. There'll be times we will dominate Esav. There will never be an equilibrium. One will always be dominant over the other. So he says the following. The Baal HaTanya was very poetic in this way. He says, Haguf nikra ir katana. The body of a person is like a little kingdom, a little city. So essentially, we have two kings that are vying over control. Like the body is this dead thing, which can be activated by different directions, right? So this is a way of visualizing the Eitz Tov and the Eitz Hara, in which these two opposing forces are two armies that are fighting for control over this piece of territory, this dirt that is our bodies. Kamosha shnei melachim nilchamim al irachas. Just as two kings fight over one city, shekol echad rotzel lekafsha, each king wants to conquer the city, v'limloch aleha, and to rule. Now, what does it mean to rule over a city? Lahanhik yoshveha kirtzono. Right? When I want to rule over a city, that means I want the inhabitants of the city to be led in accordance with my desires. V'shiyu sarim l'mashma asa, that they will turn to my commands. B'chol ashir yigzar leim. Kach, shtei hanefashos ha'lokis v'hachiyunis. The two souls, the godly soul and the biological animal soul, habahamis, which is from the klipa, although it's klipas noga, nilchamos zu im zu al haguf. Remember, the guf has faculties. Right? The guf has faculties of Dibor, Maisa, all of these different things. Who will take over those faculties? And this is the great struggle of life. Shalakis, the godly soul, Chafetza Ritzona, Shetehe Hi Levada HaMosheles Alev. It is, should be the only ruler. Umanhigaso, V'chol ho'evarim, and all of the limbs should be sarim l'mashmasa, should obey it. U'betei l'mesel l'gamri, and be totally nullified to the godly soul. U'merkava eila, and be like a chariot for that godly soul. V'yu lavush li'esher b'chinosa, v'gimel l'vusha, anal, she'yislapshu kulam b'yevari haguf. Again, the Baal HaTanya uses this expression many, many times. He always talks about the soul being dressed in many garments. But he uses the garments in multiple ways. On one hand, he says, the soul is comprised, now he doesn't call these garments, but the soul is comprised, it's koleles, it includes what are called 10 spheros of Kedusha, 10 emanations of God that represent Kedusha. The garments of the soul are the koach of machshava, the koach of thoughts, dibor, speech, and maaseh, because just as a garment is something that I wear, which reveals my function in the world. Right? A king dresses a certain way, a doctor puts on a white coat. So although on one level garments conceal, but the Baal HaTanya uses garments essentially as something that reveals. It's like those old movies about the invisible people, right? Invisible man or whatever. It's only when he wears clothes you can see him, meaning the soul is invisible. The soul only functions in the world through the garments of the soul. So the garments reveal rather than conceal. And the garments of the soul are called machshava, thought, dibor, and maaseh. A deed, action. So basically, the vehicles, even for machshava in a sense, because apparently that's a little hard to understand, because l'chora the soul has machshava, but the machshava that is concretized in human biological life, in fact, that might be the distinction between mind and brain, so to speak, is a characteristic of the body. So the soul, in fact, it's the soul needs the garments of thought, deed, and action that are operative through the body. Because otherwise the soul has no expression. It has no way of expressing itself. And the same thing is true with the Nefesh HaBahamis, that also has this negative desire to express itself through those same garments. So they're fighting over the same piece of territory over there. That the Nefesh HaLokis wants sheyishlapshu kulam b'yevori haguf, that it should be enveloped in the limbs of the body. V'yiyya haguf kulo mole mehem levadam, the body should be filled with the godly soul. Lo yavor zor b'tocham, and there'd be no stranger there. Chas v'shalom, dehainu, talas muchen shebaro, should be filled with the chabad, the chachma of the nefesh elokis, which is chachmas Hashem, binaso, lehisbonen, bigdulaso, to contemplate God's greatness, asher ad ein cheker, that has no limit, v'ein sof, ulaholid mehem al yidei hadas. Again, just in terms of vocabulary. In an earlier chapter, the Baal HaTanya was just explaining, we talk about Chabad. Chabad is Chachma, Bina, Das, right? And that's why it's called Chabad Chassidus, because this is such a fundamental principle that the emotions of love of God, fear of God, Rachamim, all the good emotions, should be products of one's Machshava. They shouldn't just be spontaneous feelings. So what is the difference between Chachma, again, Chachma, Bina, Das? Like, what exactly are these different terms? So he says Chachma refers to the capacity for thought. That is a koach, that is a potentiality that exists within a human being or a human soul. In fact, the word Chachma he brings from the Mekubalim is actually an abbreviation if you reverse the letters, Koach Ma. It is a power to do something. What? A power of what? It's not yet focused. It is the general capacity to think, to analyze, the power of one's mind, which exists in the soul, but it needs to be activated through the brain, which is part of the human body. Once one begins to focus their intellect on a specific thought, that is already the characteristic of Bina. Now, that's a little different than Chazal often interpret. Chazal interpret Chachma as the acquisition of knowledge, and Bina is to understand something new from something old. This is a bit of a little different definition. A Chachma is undifferentiated potential thought. Bina is when it's focused on a specific thing. And Das, he says, since Das is often used as an example of intimacy between husband and wife, right? And Adam knew his wife, so Das is when one intensifies the Bina, so it becomes a permanent, inseparable part of their being, which essentially means when the Bina influences the total person, including his heart and his emotions. Das essentially is the chibor, is the connector between the conclusions of the mind. So Chachma is the koach, Bina is the actual thought, and Das is the depth of the thought that can eventually become a permanent part of you by transforming your emotions and your feelings. So it's not just in the mind, but it's this pashet, it spreads to the whole guf, so it is the chibur. And in fact, in Kabbalah, again, these are not things that the Baal Tanya invented. He quotes them from earlier sources. Chachma and Bina are referred to as father and mother. As father and mother, because just as from Hashem, see, this is how the person mirrors the divine. The Chachma, Bina, and Das of Hashem creates the midos of Chesed, Gevura, the emotional characteristics. So too within the human being, it is the Chachma and the Bina, which then become Das, that give rise to all of the good emotions within the human being. Because essentially, we are in the image of Hashem. And in ways we don't understand, Hashem's emotional expressions in the world are a product of the Abba and Ima of Chachma and Bina. So too, within the Adam, that is B'Tselem Elokim, it is the Chachma and Bina which give rise to the Sviros. And indeed, Kabbalah uses openly sexual imagery. They basically say Das is a sexual imagery, and it refers to the mating of Chachma and Bina in Das, which produces the Sviros. So you see that, now ultimately, this could be expressed in a relatively simple way, psychologically. So, you know, there are people who try to rewrite the Tanya as a modern treatise in psychology that basically says that your mind can control your emotions. I mean, you can actually find this theme in a lot of self-help books, in point of fact. It's a very, very valid theme. But part of the richness is the richness and maybe the strangeness for many of us is the way this is expressed using this vocabulary of Kabbalah, in which Chachma and Bina are the father and the mother that mate. And through Das, they create an offspring, which are the emotions and the feelings that are within the human personality.
Das is the offspring.
Das is not the offspring. Das is the intercourse. Das is the chibur of Chachma and Das that enables the offspring to be produced.
And Rashi explains it for the Tzalel, he has a different criteria for Chachma.
Yeah, this is not, I mean, this definition is not... is not the standard definition. So what he says is the following. He says the offspring are all positive, but here is the thing. In ways we don't understand, the nefesh haba, everything that the nefesh elokis has an exact opposite parallel in the nefesh habahamis. And that is, if the nefesh elokis originates from the 10 spheres of Kedusha, and there's what's called the Chabad Shebemochen, the Chachma Bina Das and the Moach, there actually is an exact parallel structure in the Nefesh Bahamas, in which there is also a Chachma, it's hard to understand this, a Chachma Bina Das of the Nefesh Bahamas, and there is what is called the 10 Sviros of Misavusa, which means the 10 Sviros of negativity and evil, and they also produce, right? Just like, you know, you have matter and antimatter, you know, you have chesed gevurah, and then you have something like, you know, anti-chesed, anti-gevurah, whatever that would be. And that's connected to the klipos, yeah. But what he says once again is that the nefesh bahamas of a Jew is still klipas noga. So it does have a connection to Kedusha. Even in its opposition to Kedusha, it is connected to Kedusha.
So that is the first one using the klipos?
You know, I'm not a total expert in it. I'm not sure at all in the history of Kabbalah, but I'm almost certain he's not the first. We forget, you know, many people think, like, you know, the Ari was like the first Makubal. You know, the truth of the matter is that there was a, even putting aside the fact that, you know, Kabbalah itself means, you know, all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu or Avraham Avinu, Sefer Yetzirah, according to some people, was written by Adam Arishon or by Avraham Avinu. But even putting aside those traditions, we have a literature of Kabbalah, that goes back hundreds of years before the Arizal. Number one, the Ramban in his commentary in Chumash.
Yeah, well, yes.
But the Ramban does not write a lot on Kabbalah. But we have Kabbalistic books. We have, you know, Sifrei Kabbalah that go back hundreds of years before the Arizal. So the Arizal did create a new system. It was a system that was somewhat different. But the concept of klipos, I mean, these were terms, the sphere, the Ari didn't invent the 10 spheros. I mean, this goes back, hundreds and hundreds of years, as documented things.
Where is it mentioned in Ten Sefirot before?
In the Sefer Yetzirah, in the Sefer HaBohir, there are many, many early sources. Now, it's true that the Arizal, actually, the Arizal didn't write anything. The Arizal, you know, the only written thing we have from the Arizal was we have his signature on a receipt for pepper. The Ari had a job. The Ari was a pepper merchant. Spare time, I guess. And we actually have his ksav yad on a receipt for pepper. But the Ari did not write any sfarim at all. And the reason was, he says, it was not possible for him to write because he could not write as fast as thoughts were coming to him. He could not focus, because, you know, when you have to focus in writing something, then you have to shut out all of the stream of revelations that come to you. So everything we have, now we have like 20 volumes, which are called Kisvei HaAri, but none of them are from the Ari. All of them are from his disciple, Rav Chaim Vital. And Rav Chaim Vital wrote down, similar to Lahavdil, Plato writing down all of Socrates' stuff. Socrates didn't write anything. So Lahavdil, the Arizal did not write anything. The Ari only died at 39. The Ari only taught Kabbalah for 2 years. Because until the Ari was 37, he was a nister. He was not teaching anyone. So the Ari's whole teaching career was only 2 years. And he died in a plague, in the cholera epidemic in Sfat. And the truth is, Rav Chaim Vital was a Mekobo before he met the Ari. And Rav Chaim Vital was older than the Ari. And Rav Chaim Vital initially was very reluctant. He says, who is this young guy? What's he here to teach me anything? But it's interesting that Rav Futter points out that there were other Talmidim of the Ari who also wrote their versions of his teachings. And it became Mekubal among Mekubalim that you only look at Rav Chaim Vital. That's the only permissible version of the Ari. And yet, there are some different traditions. Some read Lurianic Kabbalah in a different way than Rav Chaim Vital. But the Baal HaTanya, who quotes very often from the Sefer Eitz Chaim, you'll notice he quotes the Sefer Eitz Chaim. The Eitz Chaim is Rav Chaim Vital's, that's why it's called Eitz Chaim, Rav Chaim Vital's main summary of the Arizal. So that's called the Eitz Chaim. So Rav Schneur Zalman utilizes Rav Chaim Vital's interpretations of the Kisvei Ari. But for example, the Vilna Gaon, who is often cholek on Rav Chaim Vital, although the Vilna Gaon doesn't tell you his sources, maybe the Vilna Gaon had direct sources from Hashem, but it is said that the Vilna Gaon's Kabbalah is often consistent with the alternative version of the Ari. Again, I'm not at all an expert in this, but those who know a bit more about this say that the Vilna Gaon's Kabbalah is often consistent with the alternative understandings of the Arizal that you have. I just mentioned one famous alternative version, Rav Menachem Azariah Mipano, the Rama Mipano. He's a great Mekobo, and he wrote Sfarim that many people do learn, but actually it's an alternative tradition because he left Eretz Yisrael before the Ari started teaching Rav Chaim Vital. So he learned with the Ari's first years, in Eretz Israel, and Rav Chaim Vital learned the second year. You know, it's just another bit of historical information. At the time of the Ari, the Rav of Tzfat, who was much older, the Rav of Tzfat was in his 70s, was none other than Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. And it is said that Rav Yosef Karo wanted to go learn Kabbalah from the Ari as well. And he would go to the Ari's drasha on Shabbos, but he would always fall asleep. So the Ari said, and you know, Rav Sakara didn't stop as I fall asleep. I mean, you know, he was the Gadol Hador, great Mekubal. Rav Sakara had a private malach he would learn with. I mean, he was Zeicher to Ruach HaKadosh. But the Ari said, it was Nigzer Min HaShemayim that you shouldn't learn from me. As the Kadosh Baruch Hu said, that you should have your own connection. It shouldn't be mediated through someone. Therefore, he says, you would not be able to hear me say any Torah. But if you think about the people that were in Sfat at the time, it's just the most amazing thing. You have Rav Yosef Karo. You have the Arizal. Shortly before the Arizal was Rav Moshe Cordovero, who was the great Mekubal before the Ari, That's another, an alternative system of Kabbalah, which is more connected to philosophy. Rav Moshe Gadever was often called the Mora Nevuchim of Kabbalah. Then you have Rav Moshe Alshich, famous darshan. You have Rav Yisrael Najara, who was the author of Karvi Bone. But again, these were Mekubalim. These were Talmidim of the Arizal. You have Shlomo Alkabetz, the author of Lecha Dodi. These were, you have Rabbi Elazar Askari, who is the Sefer Charedim, again, one of the famous Musar Svarim. All of these people lived. Then, of course, you have the Mabit. You have great poskim, the Mabit and the Marit. These are a great, great poskim that were there. There were the Radvaz. They were all Mekubalim too, but some of them didn't write in Kabbalah. And all of these were in Sfat at the same time. At that time, Sfat... The years are the 1500s. It's really the 16th century. It's essentially the 80 or so years following the Spanish Inquisition, the expulsion of the Jews from Spain. In fact, Gershon Scholem has a thesis, which, you know, makes sense. He basically says that Jews turned to Kabbalah whenever there was cataclysmic tragedy in life, and they were trying to make sense of tragedies. Which is why people have questioned how come there was not such a resurgence in Kabbalah after the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. Although it came a few years later. But immediately after the Holocaust, there was no... But it could be that sometimes a tragedy is so overwhelming that you know, you can't even respond that way. Madonna wasn't born yet, right. Right. But Scholem shows that Kabbalah tends to be a response to great, great tragedies. That befall the Jewish people. So this was just a tremendous thing. In those days, Tzfat was a much more intense Jewish center than Yerushalayim. For various reasons, at different times, there were not that many Jews in Yerushalayim, etc. Also, Jerusalem was a much more important city in those days to Christians. And so when Christians were dominant, Jews often didn't have that much of a chance to settle. Up north in Tzfat, the Christians had much less interest. Although there were some, you know, if you go, there actually is in Tzfat, you'll actually see something from the Crusaders. They built some stuff up there too. And Akko, of course, was a major Christian city during the Crusades. But Tzfat, they kind of left alone. Nobody was much interested in it. So as a result, it became a place where people would gather together. But what happens in Tzfat is every so often, there are tremendous earthquakes that destroy the city. It happens like every 100 years. There are some major earthquakes. And again, some say these are simanim, when there's too much of a critical mass of Mekubalim that are learning the secrets of creation and can bring Mashiach and bring the Geula. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not allow them to do that. In fact, that's why you find Mekubalim die very young. The Arizal died at 39. Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, later, the Ramchal was a great, great Mekubal. He also died at 40. Rav Moshe Cordovero died, I think, at 48. Aryeh Kaplan, again, not the same as that, but Aryeh Kaplan was quite a Mekubal as well, and he died tragically very young as well. So it is something that one has to be careful about these things. And again, part of this death, the death of the Mekubal, I mean, you can understand this in different ways. You can understand it as kind of a, you know, God is taking them away because they're revealing too much to the world. Or it could actually be that as the neshama is so infused with a passionate love of Hashem, it no longer wants to stay in the guf. It separates. And Aryeh Kaplan even says in some of his books on Jewish meditation, which are based on Kabbalah, he says it's like going swimming. You have to have a buddy there. He actually says you have to have somebody there who will pull you back. He actually writes this. He says there is a risk that you will not be able. And this is what Chazal and Rambam, Chazal talk about the famous Mishnah, Arba Nichnasu Lepardes. And what is that talking about? He says there were four great rabbis who entered the garden. They entered the orchard. And it mentions Ben Azai and Ben Zoma and Elisha Ben Avuya and Rabbi Akiva. One died, one got crazy, Elisha ben Avuya became a heretic, and Rabbi Akiva was nichnas v'shalom v'yatzah v'shalom. So, I mean, what Chazal are obviously talking about is some type of deep meditative state in which you perceive some inner realities. So the neshama either leaves the body, or you become mentally imbalanced because you can't integrate that with the physical world. How do you become a heretic that way? It's a bit more subtle, but the Gemara basically says, in a sense, the mystic vision gets concretized into physical images. And if one doesn't understand that this is really just a metaphor for what is really going on, you can actually see God as a physical being. Because these visions are physical visions. And Elisha ben Abuya took them more literally than they were. So as a result, you become a heretic. Rabbi Akiva was able. That was Rabbi Akiva's great madriga. Did you want to? Yeah, Jim.
I was
going to
ask, maybe that's where they suggest not coming from Bolam before the age of 40.
That's right. That's correct. That's why there is an age. That's why there is an age limit. I think most of us are there. Whatever it is, but the truth is, what we're doing is not really Kabbalah. We're just looking at. So that's okay. That's okay. But that's why it says one should be married. One should have children, and the phrase that's often used is one should have filled up their belly with shas and poskim, because you have to be rooted. I mean, I'll tell you this. I mean, there's a person I know. I used to learn with him, and he lives. He doesn't live here, but he is unfortunately going through something, and it's hard to know if something is a mental breakdown or a revelation. A person who's claiming that he has visions from Hashem and kind of Kabbalistic types of visions. His wife does not understand what this is at all, so she says that he's crazy. Very hard to know, right? How does one gauge these things? So I put him in contact with some of Kabbalah who might be able to sort this out. But, you know, are people crazy who have visions? Or is there indeed, these are some of the mechanisms by which HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates to us? Or maybe they're not even mutually inconsistent. You can be crazy and have a vision. Just as the Dalits and the Chazula Pardis, some of them did lose their mind even though they had genuine visions. But one of the things I advised him to do is I advised him how important it was that every day he had to learn Gemara. He had to learn Gemara. He had to be rooted in the physical reality of how halacha operates, as opposed to kind of ethereal godliness that's not rooted in the physical. Because if you don't have that rootedness to the physical world, now one might say, well, he's Gemara, you know, again, but you know, there's rootedness, but in a spiritual sense. In other words, kind of take spirituality and root it in tangible things, then you become incapable of living in the world. Now, that could either mean you die, that could mean you go crazy, or it means you can't hold a job. In other words, you just can't do things anymore because you're connected to that different level. So it is that's why the Rishonim already said one should not learn Kabbalah unless they are rooted in shas and poskim and the like, right? So that's the big danger here. I don't remember how we got onto this, but okay. But what he's saying is, these souls have exactly parallel faculties: 10 spheros of kedusha, a chachma bina das of goodness, a chachma bina das of Misavusa, which is a term for Tuma, etc. They both need, it's almost like invasion of the body snatchers, right? They have to take over a body. Because the only way they can express their essence is through a human body. So they're fighting over this territory. Because the body has faculties of expression. Dibor, Maisa. So each soul is fighting over, taking over that faculty of the body. Daniel Klaas Mukh Shibiroshi Mamulan Michabad Shabinevesha Lokishi Chachmas Yisparach Ubinaso Lisponen Begdulaso Ad Ein Cheker. Right, the desire of the godly soul is to take over the body so it will contemplate the grandeur of Hashem, which is without limit, the Ein Sof. Ulaholim on it does, and through Das, right? Das is the chibor of chachma and bina. You will have yira, fear of God, pachad Hashem, reverence of God, avas Hashem, love of God, ke'esh boara belibo, repeating the expression, like a fire that is burning in your heart, Kerishve Shalheves, like a torch. Leos Nixafa Vagam Kolsa Nafsha. Again, he's actually paraphrasing David HaMelech, right? David HaMelech, when he describes how one's soul pines for Hashem. So David HaMelech says, Nixafa Vagam Kolsa Nafshi. Again, it's hard to translate this expression in English. In English, it would say, my soul yearns and pines. But Kolsa Nafshi actually also connotes the notion of death. My soul wants to leave the body to be connected to Hashem. B'chashika v'chafetza, with yearning and desire, l'davkabo b'ein sof baruch hu, to God, which is infinite, the Ein Sof. Ein Sof is the common Kabbalistic name for the Almighty, is really a negative name. In other words, it doesn't describe what Hashem is, it describes what Hashem is not. Ein Sof, that which has no limits. That actually goes back even to a non-Kabbalistic source. This is the Rambam's famous idea in the Guide to the Perplexed, which is called the Doctrine of Negative Attributes by philosophers, that there is nothing in affirmation we can truly say about Hashem's essence. We can only say what Hashem isn't. Mm-hmm. Hashem is not finite. In other words, because we know what we are. So we can look at ourselves and we can say God is not what we are. And in fact, the Rambam says, even the so-called emotional attributes of Hashem, rachum, merciful, are not descriptions of inner states. They are simply descriptions of outward behaviors. So I can say, the Rambam says, because Hashem gives us life, because Hashem gives us parnasa, so I see in behaviors and expressions of God things that we would identify, had a human been doing it, as the human has mercy. But the Rambam says, we are not describing an inner emotional state, because Hashem can only be described by negative attributes, and that is exactly what the Mekubalim say. We describe Him as Ein Sof. Now, of course, the Sviros are describing plenty of attributes, but technically, again, I'm just giving you words here. I don't say I have an understanding of them, but technically, the Mekubal will say, you are not describing the Ein Sof, you are describing the Or Ein Sof. There's a light that emanates from God that we describe in different ways, but that is not a description of the Ein Sof. The Ein Sof has no description. Okay, so again, he uses that same lashon. B'chol lev v'nefesh u'ma'od mi'umke t'liba, and this comes from the depth of the heart, shebechalal hayamini, on the right side, she'etocho ratzof ava, that you're now filled with love, mole v'gadish. Again, part of the power of these things is the repetition and elaboration of what it means to love God. That malei v'gadish, your heart is overflowing in abundance. It can't even be contained. What happens? Ad shetispashet gam l'chalol hasmali. The overflow of the right will eventually overflow to the left. So even the animal passions become conquered. The conquest is not only of the guf now, but you conquer the enemy as well, and you make it your own. Le'achpaya le'sitra achra, the other side. Now, by the way, now you understand, even in a physical sense, right? Sitra achra is the term that's used for the Yetzer Hara. But in a very physical way, right? It's the right side of the heart and the left side. So you get the other side, right? Literally. The sitra achra, yisayid hamayim harayim, shebashu ataiva. Again, this goes back to the parallel structure. In addition to the Sviros and everything else, we also use this image, which is actually taken from Greek philosophy, about the four basic elements, that all matter, including spiritual matter, is somehow comprised of these four elemental forces of what? Mayim, and water, and fire, and air, and dirt. These are afar. These are considered the four elemental forces. And in a sense, they are spiritual elements of Kedusha, of the godly soul. And in their negative forms, they are spiritual elements of the animal soul. How is that so? In the godly soul, we say, fire is the source of passion and love for God. Water is the source of pleasure in serving Hashem, because water is something that's pleasurable, and that gives a person pleasure in his avodas Hashem. He says dirt is the source of humility, and wind is the source of the koach of prayer. In other words, these are different faculties that we get. In a negative way, they coexist in their negative forms, in which we say fire is the source of anger and hate, water is the source of hedonism and lust, wind is the source of arrogance, like we say gevei ruach, and ofor is the source of depression and yish, giving up hope when a person gets out. So these four yesodos, in a spiritual sense, are the four yesodos of good and the four yesodos of bad, which animate the soul. So he makes the point that the fire that emerges from the right side of the heart, which is passionate love, will be able to extinguish the bad waters of the heart. And even though, generally speaking, water extinguishes fire, but sometimes if the fire is powerful enough, it causes the water to evaporate. So what he's saying is the fire can evaporate the mayim rayim of the chalal hasmali, and therefore what happens is shehi ataiva shemeklipas nega l'shanaisa ulahavcha misanugei olam hazeh. So your desire for pleasure will no longer be the pleasures of this world, but it will turn to avas Hashem. And this could be the inner meaning, he says, of loving Hashem b'chol levavcha. Right, this is a famous chazal that Rashi quotes. We say in Kriya Shema, you should love Hashem b'chol levavcha. You have to say b'chol levavcha, with all of your heart. Rashi points out from the Medrash that it should say b'chol libcha. Why levav? Right? So it says b'shnei yitzarecha. You have to love Hashem with your two inclinations, the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. And people have, right, that's what Rashi says, from the Sifri. So the question is, what does it mean to love Hashem with the Yetzer Hara? Right, that's a question everyone asks. So some people say what it means is, you love Hashem with your Yetzer Tov by following the Yetzer Tov, and you love Hashem with the Yetzer Hara by not following the Yetzer Hara. That's an expression of love of Hashem. Others say, which is really what the Baal HaTanya is saying in more elaborate Kabbalistic terminology, is you take even the negative aspects of your personality and you elevate them in ways that serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, you can take prosaic examples. Let's assume, for example, this is very important in chinuch. Let's assume that a certain child has ADD, right? Can't sit still. So during a Gemara class, you know, constantly moving around, walking around, can't focus. So that's, we would say, a bad habit, although perhaps it's not totally within his control. But you can take those bad habits and you can turn it into a source of something good. He could be the one that will, you know, go to the airport to pick up, you know, all the Rosh Yeshiva for the Agudah conventions because he can't sit still, but you take that energy and you use it in positive and constructive ways. I mean, that would be the simple meaning of taking that which would normally be regarded as negative, turning it into a positive. Well, the Baal HaTanya says a thought very similar to that, although a bit deeper. And he says that ultimately, when one's heart, the right part of the heart, so to speak, coming from the mind, is inflamed with avas Hashem, it will eventually overpower even the animal soul. So the animal soul itself will find its fulfillment in serving Hashem. Remember, the mayim of the animal soul is a pleasure seeker. So you're not going to get rid of that desire for pleasure. But you can redefine what it is that gives you that pleasure. And through the outpouring of the love of God, the animal soul will seek its pleasure in connecting to Hashem. So it's still a pleasure seeker, which suggests, in other words, that the animal soul has not become a godly soul. It is seeking pleasure, but it will find its pleasure in serving Hashem in that way. Right? So that's the meaning of serving Hashem with your two Yetzirahs, the Hainu, Yale, V'yavo, V'yagia, again paraphrasing Yale, V'yavo, L'madregas Ava, Rabba, V'chiba, Yisera, M'madregas Ava, Aza, Kirish, V'yesh, V'hi, Anikris, B'kasev, Ava, B'sanugin. Again, interesting, you know, there's a phrase, Ava, B'sanugin. That means love that gives pleasure. So the Bala Tanya says, pleasure, in a sense, is a selfish emotion. So pleasure comes from the Nefesh HaBahamas. But it represents a very high level. Because in order that the Nefesh HaBahamas would get Tanug in Ava, it is only because there's an overwhelming Ava that comes from the Nefesh HaLokis. And therefore, the fact there can be a spillover that the Nefesh HaBahamas gets Tanug in the Ava is a credit to the magnitude of the godly love of the record. So Ava B'Tanugin is not in itself the godly love, but it exemplifies how intense the godly love must have been to even influence the animal soul to seek that out. So these are interesting. A lot of these associations are developed. You know, the Alter Rebbe has, the Baal Tanya has other svarim besides the Tanya. He has a very big sefer of drushos on Parshios called Likutei Torah. Very difficult sefer. Again, Likutei Torah is one of the, even among Chabad, it's one of those svarim that everybody has. Very few people learn because it's very deep. The Baal Tanya is not a, you know, he's not an easy writer in that sense because the ideas are deep and complicated. But the Tanya is often alluding to ideas that are developed at much greater length in his other svarim. Ava B'Tanugim, Ava Rabba, you know, these have specific meanings. But essentially, the way he's using them here, they are references to the overflow of love that ultimately transforms even the Nefesh HaBahamas, etc. Okay, just read a few more lines. And then you get something that is called Me'ein Olam Haba. Because in Olam Haba, the one thing that you're not going to have is you're not going to have the pull and the tension between the animal soul and the godly soul. You're not going to be torn in different directions. So when you get a spillover that even the animal soul is getting that pleasure, you are experiencing something like Olam Haba, because there's no longer going to be that tension. But the oneg comes b'moach chachma v'seichel. It starts off with chachma and seichel hamisaneg v'haskolas Hashem v'yidiyaso kefi hasaga sichlo v'chachmaso, and that is b'chinas mayim v'zera. So again, there's kind of mixing metaphors here. We described, okay, here's the thing. The love that emerges from that moach is called fire. But the chachma and bina itself are compared to water and seed. Right? The water causes a seed to grow, as the pasuk says, or zarua letzadik, etc. So how all of this works together is a little difficult. It's like the water and the seed of the chachma and the bina produce a fire in the lathe that then extinguishes the water in the left part of the heart and replaces it with a tonic of good water. Again, we're using fire and water as if, you know, they're all working together. But this is the description of the notion of love of God. And the Baal Tanya says in a number of places that the ultimate desire of the soul is not for Gan Eden, it is not for Olam Haba, it is just to be with Hashem. Now, in other words, it's not for any type of external reward, no matter what it is. And what do they say? They say on the Baal Tanya's deathbed, he asked his Talmidim, what do you see when you look up? And they said, well, we see a ceiling. We see a roof. You know, we see whatever you see. So he says, no. He says, you have to see. This is from the Baal Shem Tov. It says, B'dvar Hashem, Shemayim Nasu. Or so the Olam, I'm sorry, the Olam Hashem, Dvarcha Nitzav Bashamayim. This is a pasuk in Tehillim. Your word stands forever. So the Baal Shem Tov says what that means is, Hashem created the world with Yehi Or. Or whatever he said, Yehi this, Yehi this. So he says, it's not that Hashem said it and something came into being, but rather somehow that word is still here, and that is giving koach to the Bria. The Olam Hashem, Devorcha Nitzav Bashamayim. Your word is holding up the heavens. Your word. So the Baba Tanya says, when he looks up at the ceiling, he sees the Devar Hashem that is giving life to that ceiling. That's what a person has to say. Like the whole world is, the Devar Hashem is Mekayim the world at that particular moment. In fact, Rav Moshe Cordovero says, and it will just end here, that this is a deeper understanding. You know, the Navi Micha says, we say this in Tashlich, Mikel Kamocha. Who is a God like you that's Nosei Avon, that carries our sin? Over Al Pesha, he forgives our transgressions. So the Rosh Kedavera says, what do you mean, me, Kel Kamocha? I mean, we forgive. I mean, you know, we can forgive too. So he says like this. He says, it's very, very different. Because if it would simply be a matter that even though we sin, Hashem doesn't punish us, that would have a parallel in human relationships. You know, it's hard, but human being. In other words, there are times in which I'm willing to forgive somebody and not hurt them in any way. But with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not that Hashem doesn't punish us. Hashem is giving us life at the very moment we're spitting in His face. We are alive this second, not because we were born X number of years ago. We are alive this second only because Hashem is in the process of giving us life right now. So if you think about it, Hashem is giving us life. We do an Aveira at the very moment Hashem is giving us life. And Hashem doesn't stop. That's unique. That does not have a human analog. Because the most you can say about a human being is, I didn't hurt you at that time. But you say that you're giving life at the very moment. That's an amazing rachum. That's the Olam Hashem, Borcha, Nitzav Hashemayim. Okay? Have a good week, good Shabbos. I guess, we can have one more, I guess. One more. It'll be the last till after Pesach.
Rabbi Byron, can you recommend a text that others can buy?
There are really only two. There are three. There are three. There are three that you can look at. There is a standard one-volume translation of Tanya with some footnotes. There is the Lessons on Tanya, which is, five volumes? Which is very good. And that, by the way, is available for free download on Chabad's website.
Really?
So you can actually get it for free. And the other one is Adin Steinsaltz. Has two or three volumes. Three volumes.
He's good.
The Steinsaltz is very good. Steinsaltz is very, very good.
Not the one that you download for free.
The download is good too. The only ones, the download is long. It's very long because it's a line by line, which is a good thing. But it is very long. It's five volumes.
That's a lot of paper.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Give me your telephone. You know, just
sure.
Put down. I don't have. Here, put down. I'll go with this. I'll get paper later on.
So you'll be here for Pesach, no?
The first 3 days will be with Sons, and then the rest will be here.
Okay. There's no office or anything.
Correct.
Okay. So you pick up this pen, you make me a shaliach for you and your husband to sell the guy's house and rent him before you. Okay?
Yes.
Okay, sure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Isn't Kripa's Nova? Yeah. Like Nova.
Well, thank you very much.